This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 394, brought to you by Eternal Warrior number 1 from Valiant Comics and iFanboy listeners just like you. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 394. My name is Paul Montgomery. Joining me, Mr. Josh Flanagan.
Hi.
And a special guest this week from the film Pacific Rim, Idris Elba.
Hello.
I want to see how long we can have them believe it. Okay, at iFanboy.com, we like comics. We read comics, and every week we read a bunch of comics, and then one of us picks the best book and writes about it on the website, and then we talk about it on this year's podcast along with various other topics of interest. Before we get to the show, a quick reminder slash warning. This is a review show, and we will be talking about the things that happen in this week's books. So if you're worried about spoilers, go away.
Leave. We didn't want you here in the first place.
This week, Idris had the pick.
It was a pretty heavy week. Not as bad as a few weeks ago, but I had about 20 books to read. Even though I had that many books, it was still a pretty easy pick of the week. Justice League 22 stood out head and shoulders above everything else I read as the most fun, best book I read this week. This is the first issue of The Trinity War. The I guess it's the first DC event, although it's not really like a big event. It's only taking place within the Justice League books, and it's only 6 issues long, and it's going to be over in 2 months. But it's their first real crossover event they've done in the 2 years since launching the New 52, which is an admirable amount of restraint for a comic book company these days.
You're not wrong. I got to give you that. It doesn't feel like in my life we have been bereft of events, but I suppose we have. So that's fine.
I mean, you can count the launch of the New 52 itself as an event in comics, not an event story, but they haven't really done anything since then, which is pretty amazing.
Animal Man.
They do like Atlantis Attacks 2 or something.
Right, but this is sort of their first official thing where there's tie-in books that are not taking place within the actual story. Like, this is, you know.
You're right.
This is their first real event story. It's not really, crossover is one thing, event is another. This is tie-in books in the Pandora books and Constantine and things like that. Mm. Anyway, Justice League 22, part one, Geoff Johns, Ivan Reis. And one thing I've found over the years is that Geoff Johns does a really good job of kicking off an event. You know, he had the modern-day classic Blackest Night number one, which Josh passed over way back in the day. We had.
Is anyone ever going to let that go?
No. We had
that fucking issue of Scalp was amazing.
Blackest Night. Infinite Crisis started off great. Sinestro Corps War. Like, he does a really good job of putting you into the event. I've enjoyed all those events, but you know, events will go off the rails as they often do. But this first issue, he's really good at it. He sets the stage. He gets the pieces in place. He does a good job setting the stakes, setting the tone, and making you excited for the next issue. And in this issue, What's going to happen is Justice League of America, and Justice League Dark are going to cross over in this event. And in this issue, they all sort of meet in the desert of Khandaq, and a fight ensues. So he does a good job of setting up. There's a lot of characters in this book, and he does a really good job of balancing everything and not making anything feel too heavy, too overblown. Shazam, who we've met in the backup stories of Justice League, he's now in this integral into the story. He goes to Khandaq to spread the ashes of Black Adam, who he defeated in his story. And in doing so, he sort of violates a whole bunch of international laws because he's only a kid and doesn't understand international diplomacy. Justice League goes to stop him. The Justice League of America go to stop them. And in the mix of that is a bunch of members of Justice League Dark who are either helping out the Justice League or are just peripheral to the story but will soon be in part of the story. And so all the characters are coming together in this giant fight in the desert. So
and Fitz Wallace got blown up, and we don't know if Donna's going to be okay or not.
Yes. So
see how it goes.
But wait, is Lucius Malfoy going to have anything to do with this?
This is
if
one.
If
you followed that at home,
you're our people. And B, if you haven't followed at home, I'm very sorry about that.
Didn't that happen in the later seasons in which I watched?
It did. Yeah.
I don't really care about that then.
It's very beginning of that.
Wonderfully illustrated by Ivan Reis, who is sort of built for this kind of story.
It's nice, though. It's actually, I don't know if restrained is the word I want to use, but relative to, if you remember what Blackest Night sort of looked like.
It was crazy.
It was way overblown, and this is
like Sinestro Corps wars. I mean, that stuff is all over the place, and I don't know if I agree with that, though, about this. I still think it's a little bit messy.
Messy in how?
All those tarot cards all over the place, and I don't know. It's I get honest with you, I didn't really like this a lot. Mm-hmm. It's I liked Shazam in this, and I liked Shazam punching Superman and knocking him out, and then realizing what he just did, and as a kid realizing that you knocked out Superman. It's kind of cool, and he reacts to that, and then the fight escalates from there. Other than that, I thought it was a little bit convoluted, and I don't know. Isn't it ostensibly about like Pandora is trying to eradicate all evil in the world, and it's a little broad. I don't know.
See, I thought it was very focused and very small. I agree with Josh, not just in the art, but in the story-wise. I thought it was a very sort of tight story and tight event. It's not a cosmic story in the sense of Blackest Night. It's not a cosmic story in the sense of Sinestro Corps War or even Infinite Crisis, which was a multi-cosmic story. This is just, very focused on this very small group of people, but having a larger
impact. I don't know if it's that small of a group. I mean, you get the whole Justice League, and you've got the Justice League of America and their handlers and all of these people in the background in terms of the question. And
right, but it's not if you look at Infinite Crisis, it's basically every character in the DCU. If you look at Blackest Night, there's literally the entire Green Lantern Corps plus all the Justice League plus everyone else that was involved in it. I mean, this is comparatively a relatively small story. I mean, it's not one character because it's a big event story, but it's not a global, it's not a cosmic spanning event. So it's very, in that sense, I thought very focused. And it's two teams. I mean, there's not that many people on the two teams are basically the same number of people, and it's not that large. You throw the question in, you throw Pandora in, you throw the Phantom Stranger, you throw in members of one team who are secretly working for another team. There's a lot of things going on here. A lot of escalating tension and a lot of it felt very much like the opening of a movie that's going to get very exciting very quickly. And then
drag on for 2 years.
Well, because only 2 months, because it's going to happen every...
That was a Blackest Night joke.
Yeah. So, I really
I'm just saying that Scalped ended fine. there was nothing... But everybody... history bears me out.
Actually, I don't think that the problem with Blackest Night was Blackest Night. The problem with Blackest Night was everything after Blackest Night.
They couldn't let it go.
Yeah, I think that was the problem. Anyway, I'm very excited for Trinity War. If you're not excited for it or not interested in, don't care. It doesn't matter because it's not gonna affect you if you don't read these books, or you can just skip them. It'll be over in 2 months. So
I will say that I like Hawkman wanting to pick up the slack for Vibe, saying that he'll take it because each of the Justice League of America members has their own target. And so, Martian Manhunter is assigned to Superman, Catwoman's assigned to Batman, and they each have their sort of assets that they have to deal with.
What if they don't cooperate? Like, let's say I'm assigned to fight you, Paul.
Right.
And I come after you, but you decide you're going to fight Josh.
Well, it's got to be like all those covers where it's like you're running headlong into each other, like the 90s X-Men cartoon.
Like, hold
opening.
Up a second. I'm supposed to be with this guy over here.
Symmetry.
You
gotta,
guys switch over. The green guy's got to fight each other. Let's get this together before we start running at each other.
That's like basketball.
Right.
I mean, so, you know,
everybody's
you got
their
guy.
Position, their numbers.
Everyone has their, like, yeah, their nemesis. Yeah.
Well, exactly. Yeah, you're at the four. You need to take their center, though, because you're a little taller and he's got a better fit. You know, it's a whole
Batman,
thing.
Man, I'm going to need you at the three before we get going.
Batman. He's like a two.
Yeah.
I felt like they dealt with that smartly in one of the Justice League animated movies where they had like assigned targets, but then they mixed it up a little bit. And like they didn't play by those rules.
Well, anyway, Justice League 22, I really liked it. It's the kickoff to DC's summer event. I feel very much in the summer event mood. It's summertime. It feels good. It feels like that's when they used to be. So I'm excited for it. I'm really looking forward to it. And Ivan Reis is drawing the Justice League chapters, which will be, I think, the opening and closing chapters. So they're looking forward to that. He's fantastic. I was really looking forward to Astro City number 2, and I did really enjoy it, although it wasn't really in the contention for Pick of the Week, but I thought it was another great issue. So far, he's been avoiding the pitfalls, I thought, of the last couple of miniseries.
This felt, even more so than the first issue, like original Astro City. Mm-hmm. Like somewhere in that first run, like a single issue in the middle there. And I really enjoyed it. It's kind of the thing where Astro City, for me, usually isn't a pick of the week kind of book.
Right. It's just a good book.
Yeah, you're just like, oh, it feels really familiar, and it's good to be there. And because he's constantly moving the camera around, it doesn't ever get very boring. You know, he's constantly going to see some other side of it. You know, and we get a little bit of ongoing stuff. But the fact is, the worst issues that we've ever done were the long stories.
Yeah.
You know, how long was the Confessor storyline? Was it four issues?
It was short. But those last couple, the Dark Ages and those were just, they went on forever and... They were characters. If you didn't care about those characters, you were with them for 2 years or however long.
And I wanted to, but I didn't really. Yeah. Anyway, the point being, like, this was one of those, like, here's another little corner of how it really works as we look at the people who are involved in fielding the calls for, you know, the people who for the Honor Guard, who's like their Avengers or whatever.
It's like their 911 system, basically. Yeah, you call the Honor Guard when your neighbor's not throwing the recycling away properly, and they. People who work there can route that to the proper authorities rather than bother the Honor Guard with it. And it was funny because I didn't know if this was going to be a one-shot or not. So the whole time I kept bracing for something really bad to happen.
I know. It's like, oh, it's just going to be a good story about a thing that happens. But I was like, that's really not the best kind of thing you want to do in narrative. and they didn't.
And it also continues the motif from the first issue with magic doors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there's this magic door that played pretty heavily into the first issue, and then in this one it's sort of like a transporter kind of thing. It's, you know, or like a, I don't know, a bigger on the inside than it is on the outside.
It's kind of like Harry Potter. You go in through the magic door to go to work. It's like going to the Ministry of Magic.
Brent Anderson, I think, continuing what is really good looking work that definitely beats out the previous miniseries we were talking about. I will take exception.
Although
however,
the fashion choices were a little closer.
That was I'm looking at it right now. It's like there's like a garbage bag.
What is
sort
she
of
wearing
smock,
at the end? Where she's then, wearing like boots
and then cargo pants and stockings up the knee. It's very. I was like, did he pull out a magazine from the early 90s and we're like, that's what I'm looking for.
It's very weird. Who wears cargo pants tied up at the knees with stockings?
But they're high pants. They're way up there. And then the ladies in the dashiki. It's odd.
Yeah, you know, they're very fashion forward in Astro City.
I guess.
It's weird. Guess. Other than that, I really did enjoy it.
Except when they go to, what's the country at the end?
France.
huh? No. The country where the bad thing happens.
Oh.
Look on the last page.
Ecuador. They go to Ecuador.
The Ecuadorians in their very traditional gaucho outfits.
Right, yeah.
And I don't know how. And
they're all wearing them, too.
I know that's what they wore in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, but I can't completely vouch for modern day Ecuador in the gaucho outfit.
And I kind of love that because like it's this temp job gone wrong. Like she wants to field one of the big exciting, you know, things and send the superheroes out on a mission, and all these other people around her end up fielding those, and then she gets this call that she thinks is just like this domestic violence thing, and it turns out to be like this global scale, you know, cataclysm. And so that's the lead-in into
the
next
issue. You know, she couldn't have known.
She
known.
Seems She seemed to have been following the protocol.
Yeah, I mean, I went back and read it after the big reveal, and the call didn't reveal anything that you would think was a global invasion. So I'm on her side here.
I'm on her side, too.
I believe HR of Humana Global will also concur.
There's a couple of different action sequences in here where it's very apparent that the Samaritan's cape is not functional whatsoever.
Doesn't matter. It looks awesome.
Would just get in the way.
I love how
that is awkward.
You're left. There's only been one or two stories with Samaritan.
Yeah.
And we you're always left wanting more of him, and you're always looking at him from below. I really like that. Part of me wants to read the big Samaritan story.
You don't really need one after the first issue.
No, I know.
The first issue ended the character pretty much.
But you kind of you want it, but you know you're never going to get it. It's like you spend like one day with the guy, and you have to hang on to that because he's got other shit to do.
Mm.
I really like that.
It was a great issue. I really like. I love that he takes a little corner of the world, usually with the normal people, and focuses on that.
Are we talking about? We're talking about four DC books in a row here, people. So for all of the people who said we didn't, this is happening.
Hey, that was a Vertigo book.
Well, we're gonna, you know, whatever. They're on the same app as far as I'm aware.
Batman 22, part two of Zero Year, and we got more reveals of what's gonna happen. A bit more of the Riddler. Nice little confrontation between the Riddler and Bruce Wayne, not Batman, but Bruce Wayne, because Batman doesn't exist yet. I thought some really great stuff here. A great Alfred and Bruce Wayne scene where Alfred gives him a little smack across the mouth and then immediately feels terrible about it.
I was like, that was rad.
Yeah.
He just slapped him in the face. look at how angry he is.
But then look at the next page. He immediately regrets what he did. He's horrified by it.
Punch where Bruce is talking to his grappler gun saying come back, and Alfred thinks he's talking to him, and it's just awkward.
He's talking to the hook.
Little does Alfred know, it's not going to get any better. He's one repressed emotion dude. He's not going to... Alfred's like, well, he'll work this out over time. Listen, I've been there, buddy. I've read it. He doesn't.
He doesn't do it. Again, the only thing I can say negatively about this is that it's just way too clean. Art-wise.
I don't like the color.
Yeah. The color's a little... I don't know if it's intentional or not to make the color very sort of pop arty.
I feel like...
It's a little Miami Vice. It was a little weird.
It's flat, which normally I like, but it's flat and pretty garish in places.
I wonder if it's intentional, because like the green floors and the purple skies. And I think whether or not it's successful, it's got to be
I believe it's intentional because it's definitely different than it was before. But I don't feel like the color. I don't feel like the colors are working together. The palette seems to be all over the place. Now I don't know how to phrase that other than I know other people have done it and it works really well.
Right.
But this doesn't seem to. The colors seem to be fighting with each other.
What'd you think of the Ouroboros page?
I liked it. Yeah.
I wish it didn't have numbers on it.
That's exactly what I thought when I was reading
it. I think it's cool.
That looked like a network note.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, put the numbers there. People will get confused, and it's like, well, that's sort of part of it. You know, why does everything have to be really easy?
Yeah, the numbers make it feel sort of like an activity page, you know? Huh?
They just also like maybe there was maybe a way to do the numbers that don't stand out like that.
Yeah.
They don't feel so much like a help aid.
It looks like a production thing. It was at the end. It was just tagged on.
Yeah, but I love the idea of young Bruce meeting Edward Nygma in, you know, like with the riddle of the Sphinx kind of hovering over them. And the Riddler presents his own, you know, riddle of the Sphinx. And Bruce figures it out immediately. And so the Riddler sort of has to step up his game right away, because this guy is in another ballpark.
Two questions: one, do we think the Red Hood is the Joker?
I had that flash in my mind.
I don't think he is.
I hope not.
I really feel like it wouldn't be that obvious.
Yeah, I think that's too easy.
That's my feeling on it. And two, Paul, did you feel like the character in the back was written for you?
I think that is Paul.
He's a little bit Sahara Sam. It's kind of fun.
He's got a monkey. He's got awesome facial hair. He's got some cool glasses, a little safari hat.
He knows what's going on. He's wearing a bow tie through all that.
Yeah. I felt like it was written for
you. It's a robot monkey, by the way.
Either way, I think as long as you've got a monkey, robot
I'm
or
I'm pretty sure robot monkey trumps monkey.
It's true, because you don't have the smell.
Yeah. Not as much of it anyway.
Or the primal desire to rip your face off.
The thing is, though, Robot Monkey, Boy, he can fling some poop with a little velocity on that guy. I like this.
It's full of gears and gyros and stuff. Yeah, and I love the idea of these backups. That it's like that. It's the lost finding himself years for Bruce. This is his backpacking through Europe thing.
You didn't like the art last time. Do you still dislike it this time, Paul?
Oh no, I think this is stronger than the previous one. Mm-hmm. There's something weird about that last. I think this is really good.
These are nice colors.
Albuquerque, well, it's Dave McKay. He's good. Albuquerque could totally draw Batman. It'd be fine.
Yes.
Not that I don't want Capullo to draw it. I'm really disappointed in the inking change, and I'm going to harp on it until people make me stop. But
yeah,
it's totally changed the look of the book. It's still a good looking book, but it's not as oh gosh wonderful as it was before. Mm-hmm. But what are you going to do?
Especially if you're, I mean, it's hard not to compare this mentally in your mind to year one. Even if the story and everything holds up, you're competing in a certain sense against
Mazzucchelli. I don't think about it so much.
Yeah, I don't find myself thinking about it at all. I think it's so different and the stakes are so different.
If he had tried to really do a year one-esque story, then I think that would be a problem. I find myself comparing it to the other arcs art-wise.
Okay. Yeah. And that makes sense. I mean, I have no problem with going back to this time period. I think it's interesting. I really haven't actually read that much of it, so I'm fine with it.
We're going to go off script here because Josh decided we should talk about Superman Unchained, the fourth DC book in a row, before we jump to some other ones from some other publishers. Superman Unchained number 2, Scott Snyder again, Jim Lee. And
that is in the script. What are you talking about?
I might have changed it after the fact. I sent you an old copy.
Buddy.
Sorry. I've gone off my script.
You're just making
Superman Unchained.
My script says Josh is stupid. How about that? The best part of this book was, I thought, the scenes with Bruce and Clark. It really did feel like, here's Scott Snyder writing Batman, and that's very clearly him writing Batman. He really has a good handle on Batman.
I super enjoyed this issue.
Yeah. I think the problem still continues to be the art. I just don't dig
it. I'm separating myself from that. But to go the other way, I think the things that are really interesting is that this is a different side of Scott Snyder.
Mm-hmm.
It's very sci-fi. I really like that he came up with things for Superman to do that were challenging and interesting. The whole sequence at the beginning of how he figures out how to save the building.
Yeah.
Dubai, hard. That's good work when it comes to Superman, and I was really into it. I don't know what's going to happen with the other Kryptonian thing. Like, I'm interested in what's going to happen there. I like the reveal. There's a bunch of stuff going on, and it's pretty cool. And the backup story actually was really cool. I really enjoyed this issue. I probably enjoyed this more than Batman this week. Now, like you said, the art is an issue because every single character is 25. Well, I was like, the General Lane is the same age as Superman. That's awesome.
It works for the superheroes because they're supposed to be younger, but everyone else, it's a problem. And I just I've never been a fan of Jim Lee doing a solo Superman book. I think he can get away with it doing Justice League because there's a lot of the characters, but when you just have Superman to look at over and over and over again, I don't think he works.
What? The other thing that came through, I hate this uniform.
Yeah.
It just feel, I'm like, why did they transport designs from 20 years ago into this book now? Like, it doesn't feel right. And I know that, and I was thinking about this a lot, but like, I mean, a lot. Tuesday to Wednesday, pretty much.
A lot of hours?
At least. It was like, I don't want to say it was 36 hours straight because I slept for like 2 hours in the middle.
Right.
But I had a juice fast. I mean, it was a whole thing.
Did you have like a whole wall up? Like a Homeland style wall where you had to really break it down?
I ran out of yarn at one point, which really slowed me down. And
the yarn store was closed.
Yeah. So I had to take apart a sweater. Yeah. And then I was out of thumbtacks. It's a whole thing.
Then your wife got mad because it was a sweater your mom made for you.
I did it on the bedroom wall. And she's like, I want to go to bed. And I was like, leave. And
this
I yelled.
This is important. All right. What? I don't even know where we started.
I don't like the uniform is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Here's another Jim Lee thing. Oh. How do you tell the difference between Clark Kent and Bruce Wayne, aside from the glasses?
The hair.
It's the sideburns.
I thought because Bruce had like kind of wavier hair.
He has a mini mullet.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Clark also has embraced the sideburns, and Bruce is just, I want that hair nowhere near my ears.
Why is Clark wearing that jacket? Is he?
He's also John Constantine Hellblazer.
No one wears a jacket like that.
It's a problem. It's a good story,
not a,
though.
Not a 25-year-old with it, journalist. He's not gonna. He's not wearing a cowboy duster.
Excuse me, blogger.
Whatever. I said journalist. Oh, yeah, I see what you mean.
Didn't he quit the
paper? Isn't the regular Superman out?
I don't read the book. Last I heard he quit the paper to be a blogger. So that's what I assume he is. Anyway.
What's Sheltered Number One?
Sheltered Number One is a new series from Image Comics, written by Ed Brisson, or Ed Brisson, I don't know how to say his name, whatever. Known by many as a letterer, but he's been putting out a couple of books. He did that comeback book with Michael Walsh a little while ago, which I really liked. It was a time travel book. This is a completely different story, illustrated by someone named Johnny Christmas.
Nice. Which,
yeah.
It's an awesome name.
Yeah.
It is an awesome name. I'm hoping it's real. For some reason, I think Guy Fieri has a friend named Johnny Christmas. I don't know why. It's going to be awesome. We find ourselves at a we're not really explained anything. We find ourselves in the middle of like a survivalist commune. And shit may or may not have gone down already, or they're expecting shit to go down. And then there's a twist. It's as much as I want to say, other than what you think it's going to be isn't what it's going to be. To a certain extent. And I really don't know what's coming next, but it was really well drawn out in terms of setting up who these characters are and how they relate to each other and this very strange little subculture that's happening. I think Johnny Christmas did a fine bit of work.
It's just fun to say.
It's like a Guys and Dolls character. I don't know.
He's like an old stock gangster.
I picture like a real like punk rock hipster kind of rockabilly guy.
That's true. It's probably
it also works. Yeah.
He's probably more likely that than he is a gangster from the '20s. I'll give you that.
Maybe. You never know in comics. Affectations are run rampant.
You're like a Dick Tracy villain.
Hey, we got a new Valiant book this week.
Yeah. Anyway, I really liked it, and I think people need to check it out. It was a really good first issue.
All right.
Yeah, we did get a new
Quantum and Woody Number One.
Does anybody have any experience with this property? Okay, that's agreed.
No, so
you're agreed that we haven't.
We haven't. They're but they're.
What is wrong with us this week?
This is really
hot. Trying to ignore it.
It's not hot now.
Josh
but it
is
was
drunk.
Really hot.
I'm just worried about San Diego.
You understand?
I got things in my mind. Let's go.
Why didn't you mention you were going? All right, to San
the goat has yet to surface in Quantum and Woody. The goat is coming. That's sort of it. Like I feel like the goat is just hanging over.
You know what's delicious is goat.
All the proceedings.
Goat's delicious.
It's gamey.
All right. So who drew this book?
This was written by James Asmus and drawn by Tom Fowler, with colors by Jordi Belair.
Josh, you've said many times that Tom Fowler is one of the best artists in comics.
I think he's a fantastic cartoonist. It's a good looking book. It's jam packed. Like it's really, there's a lot of stuff going on, and it's really talkative and not necessarily in a bad way, but it's very fast moving. The character is just a little heightened. It's this odd setup where you've got these two brothers. One is black and one is white. The white guy is the adopted one. And this is the story about their father dies and they don't all get along and they fight constantly. And shit goes down, and I think they're going to be superheroes.
Dad was a scientist, and he was working on something involving energy devices. And he had a secret, and he was hiding something in his lab. And he knew that he was sort of like he didn't have a lot of time left because people were after him. And he ends up dead. So mysterious circumstances. And then the guy who ends up being Quantum is in the military. And is very serious. And his adopted brother, Woody, who's almost named Woody Harrelson and kind of is Woody Harrelson.
Oh, my God. This is just White Men Can't Jump.
That's what I was thinking.
Holy shit. It,
and I didn't know if I was right. But, yeah, it's basically White Men Can't Jump.
It probably came out originally around that time.
Yeah. So
what is the quince?
What was the non-sequel sequel they did? It was about transit
Money
cops. Money Train.
That was a bad movie.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure White Men Can't Jump was also a bad movie, but it really came out at a time that I was like, that movie was awesome.
I love the chapters. There's titles throughout for each of the scenes, and like the first one, there is a flash forward, and they're falling, and it's like May the Road Rise Up to Meet You. There's some other good ones.
I was super impressed with his I'm going to use super as an adjective now. God, that's an irritating thing they do in the startup world that I need to stop. Anyway.
Super excited about that, Josh. Super excited about your new use super less.
Just say mad excited.
Anyway, but what they achieved here was a sense of like a lot of constant motion and a lot of things moving around. I thought Asmus did a really good job of setting up a pacing and a world that was a lot different from a lot of the other comics I was reading. And it's really close to being overdone, but it's not quite there. And I think as the issue went on, it got better. So I expect that the whole thing will pick up a little bit. Well, you know, it wasn't an amazing first issue. It was good, and it was interesting. And I think that Woody reminds me of one of my brothers.
No, I think it's a lot of fun. Really entertaining, and
Speaking of Valiant, this episode of FanBoy is brought to you by Eternal Warrior Number 1. It's the first issue of Valiant's next ongoing series, written by Greg Pak and with art by Trevor Hairsine. It's in stores September 11th, 2013, and Greg Pak's blowing up. He's writing Batman Superman, which is, I think, the number one book of that month when it came out. And he's good, and Trevor Hairsine's really good, and Valiant is continuing to put out, you know, high quality stuff with guys who may not be super A-list, but they're, oh my God, I said super. Damn it.
See?
They may not be A-list guys, but they're getting some really quality guys on their books.
We have some really great artists.
Yeah, so. Really great artists. I think they're focusing really well on getting some good artists on their books. So check it out. Eternal Warrior Number 1 in store September 11, 2013. And before we get to the next segment, I'm just going to go ahead and apologize for the rest of the show because I don't know what the hell's wrong with us this week, but we just have to roll with it.
This show's super awesome.
Avengers Arena 12. This book's fantastic. It's fantastic. You know what it is? It's one long bottle episode or locked room play. It's basically a bunch of characters in a room. The room may be gigantic, but it's really not so much about them killing each other as it is just about learning about these characters and them interacting with each other. And that's the story, and it's fantastic.
It continues to be compelling as you go all the way through it. I haven't gotten sick of it for a second.
Nope.
It's not coming out every 8 days, which I think is helpful, but also it's on time. And then the end of this issue, we get a reveal of some kind that I can't entirely suss out, but it's interesting, and
looks
I
like
looked
it's
at
the morgue.
A lot. Is it?
Looks like it's or the morgue for the dead bodies.
But isn't the? But no. But look,
it's the morgue, but it's also a little creative too.
Yeah, there's a robot there with the
robots need post.
There's a head floating.
Isn't that a person? There's bodies floating. I don't know who Powell is, but that's a thing.
Two other things about this issue. One, we had the first kind of death fake out, which was Nico. Was that her
Nico?
Name?
That was a really neat use of her powers.
But that was the other thing. I loved that basically she didn't cast spells so much as just say words, and it was like punch. And the thing.
But that's her. That's her thing, though.
She can only use a spell
she
once.
She used to cast spells, and now it's more like just she says something.
That's how it's worked. No. She like comes up with a name for a spell, and it just sort of. It knows what to do.
The trick is that she can't use anything more than once ever, right. So she's always got to come up with a new one. In my mind, I imagine there's a master list somewhere, and like at this point, he's like, I a cat? I don't know.
It's great. It's really.
I also
great.
Like that if you follow along with the characters, they have like the life meter, yeah. You know, sort of like in it's not a bar like in a fighting game, but it's like little squares and
like
they
an
fill
old
up.
Fighting game bar.
Yeah. And if you follow Chase is in the Darkhawk costume and powers now, and so he's referred to as Chase Hawk.
I don't think I noticed that the first time.
I don't know if you noticed the colorist is the guy that always works with Scotty Young, Jean-Francois Billieux.
It's a good looking book.
It's a good looking book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't lie to us when they told us Avengers Arena would be the one to watch last year, and they were right. What the heck is Ghosted?
In a week where we got a lot of books, there was actually a few new things. This is another new series from Image. It's from Skybound. This is Kirkman's little arm of Image. Ghosted, which is by Joshua Williamson and Goran Suzuka.
Ooh,
you may remember him. He was the backup artist on Why the Last Man.
Yes.
He's doing sort of a slightly different style here. This is It's a supernatural caper. It's very close to being like a Parker kind of thing where the guy gets busted out of jail and he is put in charge of putting a team together and they're gonna steal a ghost.
It starts off and it does look very Why the Last Manny to me.
Well, yeah.
It looks like that Vertigo house style that they had for a while.
I happen to know that Josh, he's a huge Vertigo fan. Mm-hmm. This is a little bit of a love letter to a book that he would have done there.
I was thinking it really feels like a Vertigo book. And yep. So this guy is in prison, and I think the genius part is we don't know why at first, and it's mm-hmm. revealed later how he ended up in prison. And there's this, you know, this big prison riot, and he's he finds out that he's been pulled out for this like Vincent Price kind of dude who has, you know, the creepy study with weird heads on the wall and stuff and weird books and everything and has these operatives working for him.
Wait a second. Is that weird? I'm just asking for someone who's not, definitely not me.
It's, I wish you had a,
it's not weird to have
in your apartment. it's a fun little caper. I thought it really handled getting stuff going up and running really fast. It was, you know, there's some really basic sort of genre tropes in here, but they're all twisted a little bit, and it was well handled.
At any point, does anybody say I ain't afraid of no ghosts?
It's got to happen eventually.
No, but I just like the directness and the call to action of you're going to steal a ghost for me. That's the only thing I don't have in my collection, and I kind of dig that.
I don't think he's going to want that when he gets it. It's like an eyes bigger than his stomach kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know why he wasn't afraid of no ghosts?
Because
trivia.
Huey Lewis was going to sue him?
No.
Because it was the same song as I Want a New Duck?
Because he hears the ghost likes the girls. That's why.
Huh.
Number one song on the day I was born.
Good song. Really? Ultimate Comics, The Ultimates 27. I was gonna get this, but then I had 20 books. I had 20 books,
dude.
And I had the pick of the week. I wasn't. Look,
okay.
You know better than anybody. You don't add new books the week you have the pick when you got 20 books already.
It could have been pick of the week.
I'm just saying, you don't add.
The art is fantastic. Fialkoff is doing something with this book that nobody else has, and I will tell you one thing. It is not an all-ages book, you know what I'm saying? It's the first page is Tony Stark with his head split open, Reed poking around in his brain, graphically, which is not related to the company. Anyway, I said it, and I was like, why am I thinking? Okay. It's just interesting. It's huge and big.
What is
he
doing with this book that no one else has done before?
He makes it feel like the Ultimates again.
So he did like, do what Mark Miller did with it.
Massive stakes, it feels like, and a bunch of moving pieces and things going on, and it really looks like he's really set it up to the point where this can't go on.
How long has he been writing this?
This is the second or third issue, I think.
I'm going to Comicsology right now, and I'm downloading it.
The art is so good. I mean, it's just – that was the other thing. Like, for a while, Sam Humphries was doing it. It was pretty good. But the art wasn't great. And at this point, it's – I can never remember the dude's name. Getting it?
Mr. Fantastic.
No, the dude who did the last Punisher.
Bill Murray.
It's – John Domenico.
John Domenico. He was good.
Come on, John Domenico.
He was very good.
Rick Moranis.
Really
We're just
good.
Naming Ghostbusters.
Dave Thomas.
No, this is a real. That's the real name, but it's got that European flair, and
awesome.
It's just.
I'm getting this right now. I'm literally in Comicsology while you talk.
It's. I wasn't on the show the last time that we stop because it's hard to do the show when you're naming things from Ghost Fire Engine,
Ernie Hudson,
Firehouse.
Oh, it hurts. All right, let's move
Restaurant
on.
Restaurant window
again. I have to reiterate the apology from earlier.
You know what I think this is going to be a really good, awful show.
Okay.
Why am I still talking? I got Peter Panzerfaust number 12. I just wanted to mention that I had mentioned before that I was getting – I was like, what's going on here?
Right.
And it's true that I still don't know who any of these characters are. I know who like Peter and Wendy are, but other than that, this was a good issue. This is a really nice sort of return to form. We're moving around. I think they regrouped. Had a little bit
again. Hooked you.
Fialkoff has written the last three issues of this book. So
yeah, it's third issue.
25, 26, 27. I'm reading Peter Panzerfaust in trade. I moved on a trade for that. But
yeah, but this is a really nice issue, and I just wanted to make up for saying I was getting a little off it. I thought this brought us back to.
If I can be absolutely serious here for a moment, I will say that in Daredevil 28, the best thing that Wade is doing right now.
Are you a god?
I think is dealing with the cancer story.
Yeah,
and I think that the most heroic thing that Matt has done in his book ever was to go back into that room. in the beginning.
That was really nice. Not like that was
no,
nice.
I mean, it was a
swell
great,
of him, yeah.
It's a great moment. I mean, he basically, the smell of the drugs, the chemo is making him physically ill, worse than he's ever been, but he goes back in like nothing's going on. I think that was the most...
It's the massive...
Yeah, like, and I like when he goes to throw up, and then he comes back and says, no matter what, I cannot go back in that room. And then you see the change in his face, and he goes back in the room.
He straightens his tie.
Yeah, because his buddy is scared. He's terrified. And
the thing is,
him.
They cut there. He threw up all over.
What's funny about this, the main crux of this issue was Matt's old bully friend showing up as an adult and it's being awkward. And this something similar happened to iFanboy writer Mike Romo, where he
really,
as an adult, ran into his childhood bully. And it made me think of him while I was reading this. But they didn't exactly happen.
He'd be played by Tom Arnold in the film version of this issue.
That was actually Mike's childhood bully.
Yes, Tom Arnold. Tom Arnold. It was a really good issue, though. I thought it was a great cover.
And yeah. I've been waiting for, like, let's do, like, an issue where it's, like, a lot of courtroom drama stuff. And, like, because we couldn't do that for a while because Matt can't handle.
He still can't, really. He's not really.
He can't be in there. He can't be doing the patter because what did he say? The Matt Murdock is Daredevil truthers are still out to get him. And so we get this courtroom scene. I was like, oh, cool. It's just going to be like this courtroom thing, even though it has to do with the Sons of the Serpents. And that's really crazy. And then the judge shoots a dude. So it is a little over the top.
I gotta believe that there are many judges who wish they could just pull out a gun and shoot a couple of dudes in the courtroom. I've known a couple of judges in my life.
Is that Judge James Carville?
Maybe.
book is so good.
So those are the books we want to talk about this week. GoodEyeFanboy.com/comics. You can make your pull list. You can rate and review your books. You can also decide what you think was the pick of the week. Even though it's not what we think, you can still make your decision.
I'm gonna need you to agree with me. I get really upset when you don't agree with the thing I think.
So we like to run down the top five picks of the week. And oh boy, this week was a close one. Number 5, Young Avengers, number 7, 5.4% of the votes. And again, this is a time of recording, and these are your votes. Number 4, Batman 22 with 12% of the votes. And here's where it gets close. Number 3, Daredevil 28 with 20.4%. Number 2, Justice League 22 with 20.5%. And number 1, East of West, number 4, with 21.9%. So you got the top three books within a percentage and a half of each other. Pretty close.
That's close.
I don't think we've ever had that the entire time we've been doing this show or doing that feature on the show.
So let's take a look at some of those user reviews. Wraith1701 said of East of West number 4, story 4 out of 5, art 4 out of 5, pick of the week percentage, again, 21.9%. This series continues to rock. In just 4 issues, Hickman has created a rich and realistic world filled with some incredibly intriguing characters and a riveting storyline. I'm not familiar with Nick Dragotta's other work, but damn, girl! No, I didn't actually say that. But the aesthetic he brings to this book is pretty fantastic.
Are you trying to sell t-shirts or something?
Maybe. Tote bags? His mix of sci-fi and Old West designs has an almost steampunky feel that scratches an itch I didn't even know I had. My only complaint is the release schedule. In a world of double shipping big-name books, the wait between each issue of the series is almost painful. It's like a regular wait between... Like,
no, that's the problem is when the world now, becomes a double shipping world, the regular shipping world becomes slow.
Becomes slow, and I think it's coming out on a fine.
This was the issue where I made it about 5 pages in, and I went, okay, I'm going to trade. Like I had no recollection of what had happened before. The character, it's a good story. It's just
I had a bit
dense,
of that problem.
It's a very
too.
Dense story. And I'm like, I'm gonna read it. All
I did
once.
For 2 pages, and then I was like, oh wait, no, I remember where we were. It was a big fight.
No, I knew where it was. It's just like the thread is not there for me when I read these really dense stories.
Nick Dragotta's really, really good.
He's really good. The art's fantastic.
That's all I came out of it with. I mean, no, I actually really liked it. I like this is out of all the sort of Hickman stuff that's been going on. I like this, and I like that it's so much different than Manhattan Projects.
All right, Steve McGee.
Young Avengers number 7. This is by Sudie McGee. I wish that was my nickname, Sudie McGee. Tits McGee. Story of 4 out of 5 and the art of 5 out of 5. Pick of the week percentage was 5.4%. In a world where Marvel releases are praised for being fun, Young Avengers may be the most fun of all and perhaps the most overlooked. If there is one quality that this book possesses, it's self-awareness. Every character in this book is rich in emotions, predominantly teenage ones. The dialogue is witty, fun, and as realistic as teenage superheroes could talk in such a colorful world. Finally, I think I may have to make up an award for the best title page of all time. as it was no more than the menu for the diner the team is at on the next page. Each contributor is their own dish, and each description is incredibly tongue-in-cheek, as Gillen contains extreme pretension and McKelvey is served with an asymmetrical haircut in 20-page portions. If you aren't reading this book, you need to be. Everybody needs to be. Luckily enough for you, this is the start of a new arc for the team, and it looks to be good or better of a ride as the last. I agree with him completely.
I love the use of Instagram as a way to show what they've been doing for the last 3 months. It was sort of a very clever, modern feel. I mean, this book feels modern in a way that a lot of books don't. I mean,
I'll tell you something. This book fulfills the promise of those two guys doing a book together.
Yeah.
And if you can't tell that they both seem to be having a blast doing this book together, you know, like it's not for you. Yeah. No, it is. But like. This is like if you were going to have
fun, they're having really a lot of fun.
They're having so much fun, and it's so obvious, and it makes the book more fun. And I think that, you know, they're both grown up, mature comic creators now. We've known them since they weren't, you know, and I think that you're seeing them hit their stride and doing something that they're really perfect for. And it's not like any of the other books at Marvel, and it's totally fun to read, but it's also super esoteric.
It's also kind of innovative in a lot of ways too. I mean,
it is.
If you look at, they still continue to do a lot of really innovative layouts. There's a couple of pages where the layouts are inside the character's head.
Well, you know, Gillen's not. He's still having fun. He's still like, well, let's see what else we can do with this, and he's pushing himself. I think
the end where they go through that mirror thing and they end up in sort of a black and white sketchy world. I mean, there's some very interesting things going on in the form of comics, not just the use of a page of Instagram photos to recap 3 months worth of activities, which I thought was really funny anyway, but. Just they're having a lot of fun and sort of, you know, forging their own path in the comics world too.
Yeah.
Doing like a Tumblr, which I think it's called like Yambler or something in the beginning for the recap page, like doing that and doing the Instagram stuff could go horribly awry could be super lame.
If you didn't know if you didn't understand perfectly. Them, they understand the medium. Well, I think a lot of writers who are in their 40s, 50s and more don't understand. So don't understand how it works.
It's like when they talk about like Facebook or FaceSpace on like Law and Order SVU or something like that. It's really out of touch but with this, they know exactly what they're doing and it's really funny. Reading it digitally, so each of the Instagram shots come up one after one, was kind of a great experience. This was great. Skiffle fluffle.
Good stuff. Go to fanboy.com/comics. You can rate and review your own books, make your pull list, and write a user review. And if it's good and you get it up early enough in the week. And it's not about one of the big books of the week that we're going to talk about anyway. There's a lot of ifs, ands, or buts to getting on the show, but no one said it was anything worth doing was easy.
You've been talking a lot to your friends about kayaking. You're going to take up kayaking. You keep talking about it.
Oh, did you know in college I was the secretary of the Ithaca College Kayak Club?
I believe it. So you should
Wait,
go
is
to
that a true sentence?
Yes, absolutely.
What?
The Ithaca College Kayak Club was not officially recognized by Ithaca College. Rather... My roommate was into kayaking. He was a kayak instructor, and he sort of had an unofficial club in the gym pool.
I'm going to guess there were a lot of women involved with this club.
There were some women in the club, but it was not...
It went into a water.
We got to learn how to kayak.
You went to the club, is what I'm hearing.
I have a photo of me in the kayak in the pool. It was a real thing. It wasn't officially sanctioned, but it was real.
You know, people don't normally kayak in pools because it tends to make for a very short trip.
No, but you learn how to you have to learn how to escape. You got to flip it over, and you got to unhook the part that keeps the kayak dry. Then you got to push.
It's like self-imposed waterboarding.
It kind of is self-imposed waterboarding. It's kind of terrifying the first time you do it. Anyway, Paul, kayaking. What can I do to get that feeling back?
One of my longtime friends, Andy Shaw. He was hunted by his college roommates too. What's that thing with skulls? And you need to be a little guy to you have the bullhorn or whatever, and you're telling everybody what to do. You got to be like the little person in the front.
What?
And there's like the person who's like they have to be kind of like skinny and short and not kayaks, but the things
crewing.
That, crewing, yeah. And so like he's like sort of looks like Jay Baruchel, and they wanted him to be that guy, and he wasn't into it because I think he's afraid of fish. But he owns turtles.
To be the megaphone guy.
What is that? My roommate's girlfriend was the captain of the team, and that was her position. I don't remember what it was though.
I never understood crew. When we got to college, everybody went and did crew, and I was like,
they
so
got
you
up really early. They ran for like 10 hours.
It's really hard.
What the fuck is that?
There's a really interesting crew sequence in the film The Social Network, which you can buy on Blu-ray through iFanboy.com/Amazon. That's right. They look like little micro machines.
So quickly, what does Amazon do for us, Paul?
They give us money sometimes if people buy stuff there and they use that link.
There you go. Yeah. So that's the best way to help the show out. Go to fanboy.com/Amazon. Make your purchases from Amazon. If you're going to buy a kayak or just want to watch the kayaking scene or the crewing scene in Social Network.
You could probably purchase the streaming. You know, if you didn't even want to wait, or you could
if
have
you're
it sent
Prime
to you.
Prime member, you could watch it. I don't know if we get any piece of that rental. Probably not. So I'm saying buy the
just
disc.
Buy the Blu-ray. Get all the extras. You can listen to Aaron Sorkin's nasally voice as he.
Do you think we get a piece of the Prime membership spot through their link? I don't know. Good question.
Listen, I don't
know. There's one way to find out.
But the thing is, if they get a Prime membership, that means they're going to be ordering a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
So we're going to get that stuff. So it all shakes out. That's the best ad we've ever done.
We need this because I've started busking and I'm very bad at it.
I thought you were hunting.
No,
humans.
I'm not talking about the performance. I'm just talking about I end up places where the police are and they say go away and stop doing
that. And I've heard that the problem is that you seem to have a problem choosing a proper receptacle for change. It's either way, way, way too small or just comedically large.
Also, when you tell them to drop it in your pants, you know, and you hold your pants out, it's weird.
Yeah.
Let's do some audience questions. Jeremy from Vancouver, Canada, has a longish question. He says, I can't tell you how excited I was to hear that Image would be offering DRM-free digital comics for sale. Thanks, Ron. How do you know Ron did it, first of all, Jeremy?
Let's not give him credit for things that we're not sure he had anything to do with, even though we do know. He had things to do with it.
In the last couple of days, though, that feeling of excitement has turned to confusion and uncertainty. Here's why.
So you have hung out with Ron.
I read everything digitally. Sure, I pick up the occasional omnibus or absolute edition, but my regular Wednesday purchases are all digital and all through Comixology or Dark Horse's app. My collection has swelled to over 2,000 comics by now. But of course, it's not really my collection that's paying to view Comixology's library. That's why I'm so excited about the DRM-free image files. The problem I've discovered is that I really enjoy the Comixology reading experience. From the way comics are organized to the panel view, it's a pleasant, easy, and efficient read. Reading Lazarus and Satellite Sam on another app, Comic Zeal, just wasn't as good of a reading experience as Comixology. Organization is harder, zooming isn't as well done, and I'm now wondering if Comixology is still worth it for the comics reading experience. Do the three of you have any thoughts on this? I know Paul likes the Comixology experience. Will you be buying your Image comics through their website now? Paul, do you enjoy the Comixology reading experience?
I do. I was just talking about the Instagram thing with Young Avengers. I read in a different mix of things. Like, I read some print books. I read a lot of things digitally now, mostly through Comixology. We get some review PDFs just given our gig. So
I read through Comixology, I don't even use the panel view. I just do the page.
Never.
Yeah.
Just a panel view is a remnant from before there were tablets.
Oh.
I think it was a thing that was developed to be able to read stuff on phones.
I don't have a tablet, and I'm reading mostly on my 13-inch MacBook, so I can't. It's not tall enough, so I need the panel view.
I get that, but see, to me, this is a completely different thing than what he's asking. But to me, the whole point of coming up with a comic book page, especially the ones that we're at, are how the paid panels all work together, and I like to look at them as a whole. But you know, you work with what you can. I know what you're saying. I like the Comixology experience as a thing. I don't understand the DRM panic as much as possible. That everybody seems like you don't own any of your media. You own DVDs, which are plastic things. The stuff that's on them, you are licensing exactly like you were licensing this. And there seems to be some panic that at some point, Comixology is going to yank the plug and you're going to lose all the stuff that you bought from them. And I suppose that's possible, but
I think Ron said that in a press release.
He did. But realistically, I don't see that happening. And if it did, like, I have boxes and boxes of comics that I bought that I don't ever go back and read anyway. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like, if I'm buying a comic, I'm paying for the experience of reading that comic. I probably won't read it again.
I look at it as going to the movies.
Yeah.
I pay a ticket to go to the movie. I leave. I don't get to take a disc of the movie with me when I leave. It's the experience of watching the story is the same.
Except you do in this instance. You just don't know if you're going to lose it eventually.
Here I get more, but I'm saying when I go to the movies, they don't hand me a DVD on the way out. I've seen it one time. I paid for it one time. At least in the comic, I can watch it again.
I think we have to I think we have to take a lesson from I Am Steranko on Twitter and live in the present and the future and not in the past. That's paraphrasing.
But while constantly telling stories about the past.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
But, you know, but at the same time, I mean, this is your trade-off. You know, you want the DRM. You can get it now. You have that. You got to make choices. You do not have the perfect option.
But also, I think one of the benefits of digital is that you have options in how you view things. You can choose on Comixology to use the viewer. You can choose to do it by the page. You can do it different ways. And I think that's good. I think it's good to give people a choice to view it how they want to.
Comics to me, I tend to think of them as a transitory medium. I tend to think of them more like they used to be.
Yeah.
They come out, you know, all the time. There's a nonstop. It's the mail. It never stops, you know. And there's always comics. If there's a story that you fall in love with, that's a great thing to buy and put on the shelf as a book.
Yeah.
But
and the real problem is that Josh is spending a fortune every time he rolls up his iPad and puts it in his back pocket.
I got to say, that has been an issue. And this is a pro tip, I suppose. A bathtub is a bad idea.
No, but it's true. I mean... The way I'm looking at digital is I read a lot of – I still go to the store and buy paper comics, but I read a lot of it in PDF form or on Comixology. And if I read something I really like, then I'm going to get the collection. Like I have the Hawkeye trades on my shelf because that book is amazing. I don't keep the issues. I've given them all away. I don't – that's how I'm looking at it now. My comic experience is digital or single is sort of my testing out the story. And then if I like it, I'll buy the collection.
Connor actually travels the rooftops in L.A. and drops his used comics down chimneys.
Yeah. He gets shot at a lot.
He does.
It's true.
They don't have chimneys.
Well, actually, that brings us to our next audience question, which is a voicemail, and it's actually very similar.
Damn, iFanboy. This is Tim from St. Paul, Minnesota. I just finished listening to the most recent podcast and was disappointed that there was no mention of Batman number 66 or 66 number 1 by Jeff Parker. I thought it was a fantastic comic that made great use of the digital format. In fact, I would say that DC's most consistent comics seem to be the digital ones, like Adventures of Superman and the Beyond books. Are these comics ignored since they will be collected in print at a later time, or is there a more nefarious reason for omitting them? Thanks. Look forward to the answer.
Yeah, huge nefarious reason.
We sit around thinking of plots and schemes to keep folks off the show.
How can we screw the most people? All right. I assume we're going to talk about that in a second.
All right, go ahead.
This is how we do the show. after a Wednesday, we'll read our books, and we send out an email to each other. Which one do you want to talk about? I want to talk about this. I'm going to talk about it a little longer. We'll talk about this one a little shorter. Blah, blah, blah. We come up with a list. We finalize it. We come and do the show. Over the years, things have changed. It used to just be we'd talk about the books that came out, and now we've got to deal with these other things that are coming in here. And I would go so far as to say that we haven't quite sorted out how to phase those things in.
Because they're coming out all the time. They're not coming out the same schedule as the other books.
And people ask why stuff isn't on our list, the pull list on the website. It's because that comes from Diamond. That's where we don't do that completely manually. You know,
it's
we don't
automated
put it
list that comes from Diamond. So those are just Diamond's products
of comic books that ship.
We can add things manually, like when we add Private Eye, but it's a pain in the ass. That's why we don't do it for a lot of things.
It's a huge pain.
Just
in the ass.
Go ahead and give away the 11 herbs and spices. Fine.
Well, that's
like five of the herbs. Let's be generous.
And listen, we've got a good number of years doing this a certain way, and now they're throwing all these other things into it. And we try to be inclusive. Sometimes we're not, you know, but. It has nothing to do with anything. You guys were both in love with this book greatly.
But wait, hold on. Let's back that ass up for a second.
All right. Poke you guys on it.
Now, we talk about Avengers Superman. We talk about Batman Beyond. We talk about Arrow. We talk about Smallville. All these books have been talked about on the show. It's not like we ignore them. They all have been talked about. We just wait till the paper book comes out because that's when they show up on the comics page. And that tends to be where we take our cue from, as Josh said earlier. So the idea that we haven't talked about or ignored them is crazy. We've talked about almost every one of them, except maybe Ami Comic Girls or one of those ones. I read that one, but we didn't talk about it. But we talked about almost every digital book. We didn't talk about Batman 66 because it hasn't come out in paper yet. Although I'm more curious to see how the reading experience will change when it comes to paper because that book really did play with the digital medium so much. And
it was made for it.
Yeah, it was made for it. So again, as Josh said, we're figuring this out. These are new things. We don't quite know how we're going to do this in the future, but it was really good.
The guys will also tell you that I was beside myself that it wasn't in contention. Yeah. Like I couldn't make it the pick because I knew that that might come up on my week whenever it comes out, and I'll be waiting for it.
It's a whole thing.
And the other thing, is also that it's a shorter work than, you know, that's why they put three of those into one.
I did not like the method of reading it.
You're a grump.
No, it's not that. I just, every time they added the word balloon, I kept wanting to go back and start over from the beginning.
I can't believe they even have Wi-Fi up there on Mount Crumpet where you live.
Yeah.
Paul and I loved it.
It was fantastic. It was beautiful.
I just don't like Batman 66.
It fits that whole milieu.
It's a concept. And it was good. I read it. I went through it. It's not my thing.
I thought one of the best things about the way they did it, which was adding word balloons and sound effects, was that they captured sort of the rhythm of the show.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which wouldn't be there if it was all on the page at the same time. Like at the end with the three, you know, what will happen to Batman next, you know, ending. It sort of worked when you read it as three pieces as opposed to just one. And some of the dialogue really worked when it came in later. It made the jokes funnier.
Yeah, and as we learned last week, Josh hates Panel Syndicate and The Private Eye. Hates it.
Right.
You said you didn't like it.
I get a bad.
So you hate it.
I said I didn't love it. Oh, I forgot. This is like politics. It's nuance.
So there you go, Tim from St. Paul. Those are the convoluted reasons why we didn't talk about that book last week.
But I should say we agree that those are really consistent books. Like,
yeah,
that's better than a lot of the print stuff that DC's.
Well, the Legends of the Batman and the Adventures of Superman. They're putting people on those books that should be on regular books for DC.
They're putting interesting creators on them.
Yeah.
And then
that goes for writers and artists as well.
Yeah. Why Jeff Parker and Chris Somney aren't doing a Superman book, other than the fact that Chris Somney's drawing Daredevil, is beyond me.
Right.
But there you go. You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. If you want to start your voicemail off by going, damn, then that's fine. I almost
fine for Paul.
Almost tore a voice, vocal cord.
You hurt parts of me.
So this week is San Diego Comic-Con, as I mentioned earlier in the show, which may be why I'm so distracted at the moment. So here's what's happening if you're going to be at San Diego. Everything that to do with us is basically happening on Thursday. That's where you can find me at 4 o'clock at the 8th Annual All-Star Podcasters Panel at room 28DE. That's from 4 to 5. I'll be up there talking the world of comics and a little bit of podcasting with John Suntress and Hyde McDonald and a whole bunch of other people from shows you probably listen to. Pat Loika will be there.
Pat Loika.
Almost immediately after that, 6 o'clock, 6 to 9, is the iFanboy Happy Hour Cocktail Party at our usual location, the Andaz Hotel Roof Deck. It's at 600 F Street, and that's always the party to be at. Last year was packed. Darwin Cook was there. Drunken Josh Flanagan was there. It was a good time had by all, so check it out this year. I'll be there. Josh will not be there, but there's a rumor that Ron will be there. So you can see the awkward...
Which one is he?
The awkward reunion between iFanboys at the Andaz Party at the hotel roof deck. So check it out. Thursday, 4 to 5 panel, 6 to 9 party. There you go.
That's all. Days are yours.
The other days I'll be at the pool.
Do what you want with those other days, is what we're saying.
You don't have to bother me those days.
No.
I'll be at home watching the news, watching some Murder, She Wrote.
So
must be nice.
You're an old, old woman. You don't want to go to San Diego.
No.
Check out iFam.
Zero interest.
iFanboy.com for the pick of the week review that was written by Connor this week and other weeks. Like next week, I'll write it. It changes.
Are you also going to be writing the book of the month review next week?
You know what? Why don't you go fuck yourself? More in depth. Okay, that was out of line.
I thought you were going to say go screw, but you really went up a notch, which caught me off guard, and that was fine. It was funny.
It's because stuff about comics there that we write. Internet news and stuff with pictures.
Movie stills.
Topics. Movie stills. Fanboy.com/about to see other places where we put movie stills, and then we'll be like talking about how bad our day is going, and then we're having coffee. Having coffee. Shitty day.
As I mentioned before, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or go to voicemail line 888-FANBOYS 326-2697. Any questions, comments, concerns, if you want to chastise Josh for his language, you can also do that there. We will be sure to forward them to him so he sees it.
It's like you don't even want a book of the month.
If you dig us, write a review in iTunes. Judge some of the other episodes. Bring that into the equation. Or better yet, tell your friends about us. Introduce your mom to the podcast. Spread that iFanboy word out there.
Spread it like butter.
Nutella.
Spread it like Nutella.
Which is delicious and hazelnutty. But it's not healthy. Don't fool yourself.
Basically, anything just you because can spread it comes is from not Europe. Healthy. It's not healthy. So we're doing the Ask a Ninja now?
Whoa! I gotta tell you, I still can't hear the name of Gore Verbinski without laughing.
When I wrote the Lone Ranger review, I went back and watched the review of
more Gore, less Verbinski.
Yes, that was the excerpt for the article. Yeah. Oh boy! All right, I'm actually hot. I'm sweaty, and I think part of the reason is that the construction site near me won't stop hammering things. I'm going a little insane.
When you're a construction site, you're a hammer and everything looks like a nail.
Right.
But there are also just a lot of nails.
Yes. Well, you got to build a building. I assume there's nails that are needed. Paul, how are you?
I'm Paul.
I'm Connor.
Remember that episode of The Wire where Snoop goes into the not Home Depot to get the nail gun?
Yes.
That was real good. That was good.
That's for you.
Because that was clearly a Home Depot, but then it wasn't.
They didn't have that kind of budget on that show.
They mentioned Home Depot later.
Why are we talking about this?
I don't know.
Because the show was awesome.
It was awesome.
All the way through, unlike
the
West Wing.
Way better than this.
Unlike the West Wing.
Hey, you go fuck yourself.
Oh.
Season 5 was bad, but 6 and 7 were good.
Yeah.
It was a different show.
Good in a different way. Yeah, it was different.
No, I don't believe you.
Listen, you know who you sound like?
I sound like you.
I'm Josh. I'm afraid of no ghosts. I hear it likes the girls. I'm afraid of no ghosts. You're gonna call Ghostbusters. If you have a dose of a freaky ghost, baby, you better call Ghostbusters. Ow! This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.